I think I'm having an art attack.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Art Attack with your host, Dr. Lizzie Dastin, and myself, artist Justin Bua. Today, I am happy and honored to do a podcast on probably the only early graffiti writing female that I've ever known, and certainly a pioneer. She is one of the founding members, I would like to say, if it was the Declaration of Independence and you have all of these wonderful, great minds together. I think that Lady Pink would be one of them, born Sandra Fabara in 1964. She is somebody that, as a kid growing up in New York City, seeing all of the graffiti around me from Revolt, Futura 2000, Lee, Bill Blast, Dondi, Revolt, Zephyr, Scene, Lady Pink was up there. You know, it's the carved into Mount Rushmore. She would be the first lady of graffiti for me personally, Lizzie. So we're doing something on Lady Pink.
And I'm very excited, of course, as a feminist and supporter of women in the arts. And the fact that this world, the culture of graffiti in the late 70s and throughout the 80s was so male dominated. And the fact that somebody is as prominent in that era as Lady Pink, I think is remarkable. And so we should talk about the sacrifices physically that potentially she made and just how she was able to assert herself in this world of hypermasculinity that I'm grateful that you know a lot about, and you have met her, you worked with her. And so I'm just excited to also get to hear your personal perspective on Lady Pink and of course of her work and her collaborations, which I think are incredibly significant.
Yeah, Lady Pink I think about her as a New Yorker, even though she's an Ecuadorian American. She was born in Ecuador and raised in the rainforest. That's probably why we see so many animals and so many plants in her life and her work. But I think that, you know, when I was a kid and I was 5 years younger than her, and I'm thinking about like all of the stories that my peers are telling me, or like these masters are telling me, is like, I know she was in the yards. You know, I know she was in the ghost yards. I know she was writing with the big wigs. You know, I know she was going around with Lee, you know, to me, one of the best graffiti writers of all time. These people were masters. And so like, she was a legend always to me. Like, she had this kind of folklore about her. And I didn't even know that females were part of the game until I heard Lady Pink. And I would see her stuff because, you know, you pull into whatever it was, 103rd Street Station, 96th Street, 72nd. She had a one, a two, a whatever she was bombing, it was there. And her life in Ecuador was very peaceful. And I know that. And I know that her her mom got away from her dad. Her dad was chasing her everywhere, you know, and trying to get back with her. This is the story that I've heard and piecemeal together. And they came over to Brooklyn, and then eventually Astoria, Queens, which is where my dad is from, Astoria, Queens, born and raised, represent. And then she was raised essentially from 7 years old on in the big city. And she was very shy. She was very coy. And I think that getting involved in the scene and the culture really made her an introvert to an extrovert, and she became very street smart and very wise. And she went to some of the darkest places that a graffiti writer can go to. And as you're growing up as a kid, like I did in New York in the 70s, you know, that was just a lot of dark, scary stuff going on. And she not only survived in it, but thrived in it, and probably was considered a toy, you know, pretty whack initially. But just knowing this from me rolling with my own peers, you if you keep at it with persistence and determination, which are omnipotent, you become great. And I think she more than anything in terms of skill set initially, I think it was really about her heart. She's a very strong person. When I worked with her on my TV show, Street Art Throwdown, she was a guest of mine on Street Art Throwdown. She was incredibly strong. And that's why I think that she is important, because in order to enter into a male dominated world, especially graffiti, which was like no females whatsoever. It was same as like b-boying, you know, or DJing or MCing, very, very, very few. And she was the first and definitely the most well-known.
And also her courage. So you talk about her strength, but I think the courage to assert herself within this male dominated space, like you say, but also just the physical logistical courage of scaling rooftops and just the stress that she must have put on her body to achieve the kind of tags that she did, and on trains and the heights and possibly getting arrested. I think that requires a certain extreme level of dedication that I don't know of any other women really exhibiting at that time. And supposedly she began doing her graffiti because she had just lost a boyfriend. She was very young and she wanted to pay homage to him. And she started with the tag of his name. And then she parlayed that into tagging her own. And what I think is so remarkable is that she was incredibly overt about her feminized nature and just the fact that she was a woman, and really embracing that in a way that not a lot of artists at this time and in years prior did. I'm thinking about the 1950s and the 1960s, when women were so desperate to obscure the fact that they were women because they wanted to be taken seriously within the art world. Lee Krasner, for instance, born Lenore, but she changed her name to something that was gender neutral. And that's something that a lot of women did across disciplines, specifically within literature and within visual arts. So here, Lady Pink is, she has this opportunity to tag as whatever moniker she wants. And she specifically chooses to celebrate the fact that she's a woman. And I think that is pretty remarkable. And the pink, she just a pink. I don't think that any other tagger would be drawn to such a color. Like, that in and of itself is pretty feminized, but also then giving the lady to it as well. And I read that she anointed herself as a lady because at that time, she and the guys that she was tagging with, they were considered royalty. So I love that there's an immediate adoption of confidence and also a celebration of being a woman. And that kind of feminist pursuit and agenda is something that we can see not only through the themes of her work, but also through the collaborations that she participated in. And I'm thinking specifically when she met Jenny Holzer. And Holzer is one of the most prominent contemporary artists to date. She has installations all over the world. She's text-based. And she was working at the same time, late 70s, early 80s, around the streets of Manhattan. And she would never identify as a graffiti writer, but I do think that her work on the streets was unusual at the time. And she had this truism project where she would write these pithy phrases and put them or type them up and wheat paste posters throughout the city. And she met Lady Pink actually through Lee Quiñones, and she lived across from this pet store where he was working. And it was through that interaction that she met Lady Pink. And then they soon collaborated on over a dozen large-scale paintings. And some of these paintings are in some of the most reputable institutions throughout the world, and at the Tate Modern, at MoMA, at other museums internationally. And I think that is really exciting, and that those collaborations are incredibly noteworthy. And there's one that's at MoMA that I am thinking of, and it says, trust visions that don't feature buckets of blood. And this is actually a three-way collaboration between Lady Pink, who did the imagery, the spray paint work in the composition that really encompasses most of the large-scale canvas. And Holzer, she contributed the text. And the image itself is based off of a documentary photograph by another female artist, Susan Macellis. And that was illustrative of this conflict in Nicaragua, this revolt against a dictatorial regime. So I see this three-way collaboration as really dynamic, because Graffiti and Cruz, they're all collabs, right? But they're mostly male collaborations. And the fact that Lady Pink has been able to parlay her practice into this feminized arena of art making, I think is pretty exceptional.
Yeah, getting back to your analysis of Lady, I mean, that was very standard, right? So like back in the days, everybody in hip hop, they were royalty, right? It was Grandmaster Melly Mel, Grandmaster Kaz. It was Kool Herc. It was, you know what I mean? The Royal Prince Ken Swift. So everybody had these names because it kind of anointed them to another level of excellence and royalty. And that was fun. You know, it just became kind of fun. So to have that kind of a moniker, especially for yourself. And Pink was because I think that everybody in her crew felt like she needed something feminine. And what's more feminine than pink, right? It's at least associated with the feminine. And as she got older, you know, I think that there was definitely a convergence, at least from a work perspective, with Georgia O'Keeffe, right? Like you look at what Lady Pink is doing. I know she really loves Georgia O'Keeffe. She loves her flowers, her feminist, ideals of her work, you know, the flowers and everything is kind of sensualized and sexualized. And I think that also her lifestyle, and we did something on Georgia O'Keeffe before, and you guys could reference that episode. We did a really great Georgia O'Keeffe episode, but you could see that she was kind of the quintessential female painter. Just like, in my opinion, Picasso is like the male quintessential painter. He does what he wants, when he wants, how he wants, in terms of like never really kowtowing like other artists did to, you know, Michelangelo, to Pope Julius, or any of the artists historically, right? They were court painters, and they were working for somebody else, doing commissions. Leyendecker, Rockwell, everyone's doing commissions. But I think in many ways, Lady Pink was doing it for herself, much like George O'Keeffe as her idol and inspiration. And she was doing it and staying, and is staying true palette wise. Now, I know that, you know, she's in all these exhibits across the world and she's internationally known, but think about this. Like, this is just a crazy thought. When she was 16, 17, she's hanging out in the Village with Andy Warhol. She's hanging out in the Village with Basquiat. She's not just hanging out with, like, you know, Lee and Zephyr and Revolt and all the graffiti guys, you know, Dondi, but she's hanging out like with the Leo Castelli crowd. That's a pretty crazy crossover. And much like Rocksteady Crew, who was the first ever breakdance crew that's been seen in the movie Wild Style, which is also Lady Pink is, you know, which is, she is in that as well. And Style Wars, Rocksteady Crew, and also Beach Street. And they're in all these movies. She has this international fame too, because as the graffiti, as the B-boy crews go international and the world starts to be exposed to it, she is also one of the first pioneers to take graffiti writing international. So she's really responsible with the pack of the graffiti writers and the B-boys and the DJs and the MCs to take what she does aesthetically and bring it to the world stage. That's something a lot of people don't think about. Like, she was probably one of the first, for sure, the first female graffiti writer. And so then she spawns inadvertently all these movements of female writers and artists that she probably inspired.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that your description of her spending time with Warhol and Basquiat and just artists that were seen and propped up by a different sect of the art world, by the more mainstream, I think that is really significant. And to me, just to go back to the Holzer collaborations, I think that's a really special part of her career and a more arcane part of Holzer's, but worthy of note and really illustrative of what you were saying about this collision between the mainstream and the fringe. And now, perhaps because of people like Lady Pink, the fringe has become the mainstream. And now we have this kind of graffiti style work and murals that are certainly influenced by that graffiti energy all around the world and in books and featured in documentaries. And that's so remarkable, from this 16-year-old girl who started tagging because she was mourning the loss of a boyfriend to the place where she is now featured on television shows and in movies and working with some of the most significant contemporary artists still alive. I just think that's really remarkable, to take this culture that is so peripatetic, where she's just physically running around and spraying whatever surface she can and migrating that into something that is not ephemeral, that is forever, and really just solidified in our culture, in our consciousness, that's worthy of tremendous note.
Yeah, and I painted her in my book, you know, before I even met her. She is the only graffiti writer that I painted in my Legends of Hip Hop book. And I've got everybody from, like, you know, Kool Herc, Run DMC, Jay-Z, everybody. And very few female participants, because I'm painting the 50 most inspirational artists to me. So yeah, I have Tribe Called Quest, and yeah, I have the Beastie Boys, but, you know, I have very few women. I have Sha-Rock as an MC, MC Light, Missy Elliott, as rappers, and some others, but really only do I have Lady Pink to represent the graffiti writers, not because it's like I didn't want to, but to me, she was the only female at that time in that culture who inspired. And when I had a chance to actually hang with her, not just meet her and like have small talk at a show or whatever, but like when she was actually on set on my TV show, Street Art Throwdown, that you could actually download from Amazon anyway. You should check it out, because it's a good reality competition show, Lizzie.
A fabulous competition show. I love Street
Art
Throwdown.
The only one. And she was the final judge. And, you know, she was harsh. Like, she was keeping it real. So, like, the last competition, this is some behind-the-scenes stuff for anybody who was a big Street Art Throwdown fan. But the last competition, it was between Annie, right? It was between Annie Grimm and Cameron. And Cameron was crying, and she was like, you know, straight up, like, you got to man up. No, she was hard.
Jenna, right? It was Jenna and Annie and Cameron. Sorry, I'm fanning out right now. I think that was the final three.
Yeah, you're right. Because, okay, Grimm helped. That's right. Grimm was the, yeah. You know the show better than I do, and I was hosting.
Sorry. Nerd alert.
No, it's good. No, but it's funny, because I remember, like, I'm just thinking about that moment, and she was harsh. We didn't even show it on camera, but she, you know, Cameron was crying, and she was really hardcore to him, and she didn't care, because she's like, dude, this is like the street. Like, we didn't, like, you have to have thick skin. And I knew at that moment that she was the real deal, because she was just coming so hard at him. And she was like, you know, you gotta just take it. You can cry all you want, but like, this is about art. This is about the street. If you're going to really do it, then what are you doing? And I remember all the producers looking at me like, God damn. Like, in me, I was like, oh, snap. But that's how she was raised. That's how she grew up. You know, she came here from Ecuador, from the rainforest, all chilled out, but then got quickly involved in the real deal subculture of graffiti. And it was, you know, kids were dying on the third rail. You know, you were getting beat up by transit cops. It was like real shit that was going down. And I feel like that hard energy is an energy that you kind of have to have in a lot of ways, especially if you're doing you know, definitely if you're doing graffiti writing and tagging, but even in an, even in a capacity of being a professional artist, because it is pretty rough. And I respected the fact that she was consistent with who she was with everybody else. It was like, she wasn't being, you know, there's no niceties. Everybody's got to work hard. If you're going to cry, bitch and moan, she wasn't about it. And I was like, yeah, I get it. You know?
Yeah. There were no errors. Was she as critical of the women in that final three as she was of Cameron?
Damn, you got to watch it, because I just don't even remember. I think she was pretty cool about it. I just think that it was his crying that set her off. I'm not kidding. Like, I saw, I was like, yo, that's all behind the scene. There's some shit somewhere about that. But, you know, I think that, I think she was fair. I think she was a fair judge. I think she was a good judge. I think she understands ability. You know, I think she's been around some giants, you know, not just in the graffiti world, but around, you know, some real great painters. And, you know, like, there's a hardness to that, that culture. And I'll say the same thing with plein air painting. Like, sometimes if you're a plein air painter, which you're painting outside, you're in the elements, there's a bear, there's a mountain lion. It's a cold day. It's freezing. Your car breaks down, whatever it is. Like, the plein air artists and the graffiti artists, there's kind of a weird overlap, you know, the concentric circle that overlaps. I feel like there in the middle of those circles is the harshness of, I don't really give a shit. I just need to create. Fuck off. Like, get out of my, who cares about anything except what the process is. And that was the life of a street artist. And that was the life of a, that's the life of a plein air painter. I'm not saying all plein air painters are like that, because I'm sure, you know, they're not at all, but I know some that are, and they don't give two shits about anything except making art, living in the moment. They don't care about the fame and the fortune. They just care about the creation. And that is to me why Lady Pink is important, because she was the first. And there's, like you said it on the head. You said courage. You had to have a lot of cojones, a lot of courage to be able to be in a female in that kind of a man's world. I was definitely intimidated, you know, by those kids, for sure. You know, those kids were, that was the real deal. It was like, do or die. And she was the only female that I knew that was doing or dying.
And even if you think decades later about the graffiti culture today, I don't really think that there are that many more female writers than there were in the 80s. Probably a handful more. But if you think about Cruz, it's still, more certainly, but it's still a male dominated world. Street art, I think, is a lot more. Do you disagree with that?
Yeah, I disagree. I think that, like, you got so many artists, like, you know, you have, I mean, God, you got so many writers now. You got, you know, Starfighter, and just so many female writers that are so excellent. But I think what you're right in saying, that she opened the door. You know, like, Cool Herc wasn't the best DJ, but he opened the door. Without Cool Herc, there's no block parties. There's no crazy, like, DJs. There's, you know, Flash opened the door. Flash, without Flash, there's no, like, incredible executioners or invisible scratch pickles. There's, like, Lady Pink was a pioneer who opened the door, because if you don't have Lady Pink, then you're missing a dot. Like, you don't have Dr. J, you don't have Michael Jordan. Like, you don't go just jump Dr. J to Jordan. There's no Jordan without Dr. J. I don't know if there's that many graffiti females in the game without Lady Pink. I really don't.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that she probably showed women graffiti writers who started working after Lady Pink. She showed them, she modeled to them that it's possible. And certainly street art is an offshoot of graffiti. And there are many female street artists in the game, but I still think in the crews, the culture crew, the graffiti world, that there aren't as many. And I think that the ones who are existent, they certainly owe a debt to Lady Pink. And I just believe that there's still more room for even more proliferation of these female writers, these voices on the streets. And I would say that Lady Pink agrees with that because education is such a huge part of her activism, and working with other women and supporting and propelling their visions and also transmutating her own to encompass that. And I think that the desire to collaborate is such a beautiful equitizing one. And that to me is another wildly important part of her practice, just that it isn't this lone genius who refuses to introduce other people's perspectives into her own, but she wants to teach, she wants to share, she wants to learn, and she will in murals that she does now. She'll work with students, which I think is a very special part of her practice too. So I believe that activism and that charge to communicate has been a strong, consistent force from the 70s until now in her work. And it's changed a little bit and it's become slightly more sophisticated, but it nevertheless has always been there.
I mean, I agree. I think that, you know, she is the, you know, once again, I'm repeating myself, but I think she's definitely the early pioneer, the early great, great artist of the day. And she's still continuing to be such a important person. So an artist, not just in hip hop, not just in graffiti, but in art history. So we have to look to her, give the nod to her, like we do to all the OGs. And we also have to say that, you know, she keeps doing it and doing it for the kids. So if you don't know Lady Pink, check her out. Check out the documentaries. Check out Wild Style. Check out Style Wars. Check out all the old school stuff, because you're going to see some great stuff and some great pioneers. Thank you, Lizzie.
Thank you. And check out Street Art Throwdown.
Exactly. Okay, everybody. Peace.